Now, back to a couple of guys who believe Rin Tin Tin may have rusted to death. It's the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.
We're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, in this segment, we have with us as our guest in the studio, your good friend and mine, Dennis Laidler, the education curator from the Potter Park Zoo. Welcome back to the studio, Dennis.
Oh, it's always good to come out and chat with you guys.
Oh, it's a pleasure for us to have you here. Dennis, we're interested in knowing what it is that Potter Park has in plan for 2011. I understand it's going to be a banner year for the zoo.
Yeah, you know, things just keep getting bigger and better for us. We can sort of settle down and look forward now that the Ingham County voters were very generous and by over 2-to-1 margins supported the millage renewal, so that for the next 5 years we have good funding as far as planning goes. We know what the dollars are going to be, and that makes it essential for planning forward.
Sure. Fantastic. So what kind of things do you plan on doing? What animals are you going to be bringing on board? And share with our listeners kind of a sneak preview of what they might see if they come out to the zoo.
Well, probably the big thing that's happening is hopefully going to continue to happen throughout the winter, weather permitting, is our black rhinos, which we've had that exhibit closed for almost 2 years. The exhibit is being completely renovated. SSP, which is the Species Survival Plan for Black Rhino, which is for accredited zoos. That's how we manage rare species. They've identified a young male and a young female at two zoos in North America that will be coming once their new home is ready.
Okay.
They're a highly endangered species in Africa. They're found in only a small number of countries. The subspecies that we have is down to just a few hundred. But we also know that reintroduction does work for rhinos. White rhinos are still not out of the woods yet, but they went from a few hundred to about 14,000 in the wild in the last 15 years. And that's because of primarily two things: reintroduction, getting the population going, and then being able to manage the poaching issues there.
Interesting. And what about, did you say the snow leopard? Tell the story about that animal.
Yeah, snow leopards are what we call a charismatic species because they're incredibly beautiful and graceful, and they just capture your attention. And we've had a female. Our female at the zoo was actually born there 13 years ago. And the big challenge with rare species, especially in captivity, is the fact if in the wild you don't have many, i.e. they're endangered, in captivity you have even fewer. And so the thing you worry about is called genetic compression or inbreeding, if you will, where you don't have enough genetic diversity, and that can lead to some very obvious inherited problems. So it's done very scientifically, and I can think of it as plenty sophisticated computer dating for rare species in that basically at any accredited zoo, as soon as an animal is born or hatched, however it comes into being, it's given an ID number equivalent to our social security number. And along with that, it comes all of its genetic history. And so you can look up its number and find out who its parents were, look up their numbers and so on and so forth. And so when a committee – and there's a committee of experts for each of these endangered species. There's over 200 SSP species with accredited zoos. And what they'll do for like snow leopards is the committee will meet at least once a year, and they make what we call breeding recommendations. And it's based on several things. First of all, the bottom line is how much space are there at zoos that have adequate housing and are accredited for snow leopards. So it may turn out that they want more babies, but they may say, you know what, we have no room.
Right,
we can't
let
anybody breed this year.
Right.
And so that's the first thing. The second thing is, do we plan to do a reintroduction in 2 years? We need an extra number of young animals so we can try and do a reintroduction. So based on all those various things, they look at, and there may be, say that there's, I don't know, I'll just pick a number out of the air. Say there's 35 zoos that participate in snow leopard SSPs, and they may say, we're going to only have 3 to breed. 3 zoos will have a breeding pair this year. So they rotate that. Obviously, for a zoo to have rare babies is a big deal. So, you know, you wait your turn if that's the situation. Now, in our case, our female has only produced one offspring in her lifetime. And she's ranked number 9 in the world as far as rare genes go in the captive or in the zoo population. So a male was sent to be paired up with her 2 years ago, and they weren't successful. And we did a fertility test, and because of his age, he just wasn't able to produce sperm anymore.
And she was how old is she?
She's 13. And
13-0. What's her breeding age?
Well, that's the thing. She's getting right about the end of her breeding age.
Okay, so they want to try to...
And so we tried to do... Because 2 years ago, after that first one, this last breeding season, we knew he wasn't fertile, but they had formed a strong pair bond. Our keepers worked with her enough that they can basically do almost all medical procedures without anesthesia. They did a complete artificial insemination procedure with no anesthesia. Which has never been done in snow leopards before. Now, it wasn't successful, but we're hoping to try again this year. But it was decided by the committee that she is so rare, it's more important that she just gets some babies out there. And we cannot be 100% certain that she'll have a breeding cycle this year, but we expect her to. And so looking at which males were available where, the number 12 ranked genetically male was at the Sacramento Zoo, and he arrived at our zoo in November. He's out of the 30-day quarantine. And so they've been paired together. What we're hoping is sometime right at the start of the year here, snow leopards are unusual. Most big cats have females have a monthly mating cycle. Snow leopards have 1 6- to 8-week window a year where they can breed. So if you're not successful, you have to wait a whole nother year.
Right.
So that's our big priority right now, is to hope that they form a strong pair bond. And he's also 13, so he's getting close to his, you know, it's one of those things where their babies, because of the rank of both the parents, would be an extremely valuable offspring to add to the captive population. Even if there's just one successful,
right,
it would be considered a very successful pairing. Anything more than that would just be a bonus.
Now, is there, with her, there's not much, but with him, do they do a lot of sperm banking and things like that?
They're just getting to where they do that with some of the species. They've been doing it longer than others. With the case of our artificial insemination attempt with her, we used fresh sperm and that was part of the challenge, because they had to collect it from a male at the John Ball Zoo in Grand Rapids, another accredited zoo. And that's probably why it wasn't successful, we suspect, because to time that exactly to get her to ovulate, they were using some hormone injections. And we think that actually may have messed her up. We don't think she actually ovulated. So
I got you.
So anyways, you know, those are just – there is this sort of concept of the frozen zoo for genetically, and it's sort of focused at the – there's an institute at the Cincinnati Zoo and also the Audubon Zoo in New Orleans, where – they have a lot of researchers dedicated to doing what you said, where they collect both eggs and sperm and freeze them cryogenically and sort of keep this bank. And they're also doing some research in both some in vitro fertilization and maybe even surrogate parenting for some of the extremely rare species. It's only in the last 5 to 8 years they figured out how to get elephants to be able to breed artificially.
Yeah, I know. I think when we were talking to Dr. Schultz the other day, I mean, it took a while for them to figure those things out, because just because you can do it for one species, you can't necessarily do it for another.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, Dennis, let's continue the conversation, because I know you guys have got some needs over at the zoo coming up for January and for February. Can you talk about what it is that you've got going out and how the public can actually get involved and help you with what you're trying to do at the zoo?
Well, yeah, we always are looking for volunteers, but in January, we're recruiting a very specific group of volunteers. You know, I'm the education curator, and I get to take the credit for all the amazing things that happen educationally at the zoo, but it's really not fair, because I don't do most of the work. Those are our zoo docents, our trained volunteer educators, and we have about 100 of them. But we're always adding more programs, so we always need more. Well, and there's some turnover. Some are MSU students that graduate and move on, and some are seniors that get to the point in their life where they spend all winter in Florida or something. But if you don't have to have any prior experience with animals or prior experience speaking or educating, it's basically if they have an interest in animals and interest in helping people develop an appreciation, awareness, and better knowledge of wildlife, then we're certainly interested in having them come out. And we have an open house. You're not making any commitment by coming out, just other than to show that you're interested. And it's January 15th from 10 to about noon. And we'll show you around. You can talk with some other docents on why they do it and what it's like for them to do it from the people actually do it, not just me who has a vested interest in you wanting to do it.
Is it something that's age specific? I mean, do you tend to get a variety?
As long as you're 18.
Yeah.
18 and to infinity.
Yeah. And do you tend to get them to infinity, so to speak?
Yes. In fact, Ina Martin, who has been one of my co-coordinators of the class where they actually take a course with us, she's in her early 80s. And she's still one of my most active docents.
That's right.
And then, you know, we have some, I know we have some 18-year-olds that just graduated from our, we have, I think we've talked before, we have a high school class taught at the zoo now.
Uh-huh.
Some of our recent graduates are interested in becoming docents. So, yeah, as long as you're 18, you're eligible.
How much of the effort in a day-to-day basis do docents do in a zoo? How important are they to the whole process?
I'm not sure a zoo could exist without docents. That's how critical they are.
Yeah.
You know, we, as an accredited zoo, go through an accreditation process, which is pretty daunting every 5 years. And one of the things that sort of blows them away, when I talk to my counterparts at other zoos, is not only the number of docents that we have for a zoo and community our size, but we get over 10,000 hours a year from our docents.
Okay.
And, you know, we're able to do programs for almost 30,000 mid-Michigan students here. And that would be just a fraction of that without the docents.
Well, Dennis, for the uninformed amongst us, who I always seem to be in that category, Rick, what is a docent's job? What do they do exactly?
Well, their primary function, we have a lot of general volunteers, and docents do a lot of these activities too. We have special events, you know, like Wonderland of Lights, all the different things, everything from hosting crafts and cookies and all that kind of stuff. But what the primary function of the docents are is we have several categories of educational programs we do. The two basic ones are we do guided theme tours throughout the zoo where, based around a theme, it might be on animal adaptations. They will take a group of, usually we divide them no more than 10 to 12 college, high school or even elementary or even pre-K students. They'll take them around the zoo and we teach them the kinds of information that we want them to have for a particular program. It's not a memorized script. Everybody gets presented in their own personal way. As long as they cover the information, that's all that's really critical.
So it's like a tour guide.
Well, in that case, but they also do outreaches. Well, they'll take the zoo van and those animals that I like to bring into the studio. That's what their animals, those animals' job is. Oh. Their job is to help people understand more and learn more. And the docents, we teach them how to handle them if they have never handled those kind of animals before, and how to present them safely for them and the audience and the animal, and also how to highlight the amazing attributes that those animals have.
Fantastic.
And it's a great thing. I mean, you get to basically play with the animals and kids and get a lot of volunteer credit while you're doing it. So
and you know, that's one of those things. A lot of them are younger, so it gives them an experience that lasts them a lifetime. And kind of, I always know that even at our store, you know, the college students and the high school kids are coming in at a crossroad and they're trying to figure out what to do with their life. And I can't imagine the, you know, we tend to have a glamorized view of the animal world as kids, but this gives them a real, you know, whether they have to clean the cages and...
Oh, yeah. You know, they don't do the day-to-day care that the keepers do, but if they bring a, take an animal out and bring it back, they're the one responsible for cleaning the travel cages, exactly what
right.
you talked about.
Right.
So there's a responsibility involved.
Right.
Certainly if, you know, the teaching someone else's child and is about as big a responsibility as you can get. So there's certainly that. And, you know, you're right. It does help. You know, some have some very pragmatic reasons for doing it. You know, for some folks, they'd like that on their resume. So it depends.
Fascinating. And Dennis, you also mentioned that you had an event coming up in February for adults only. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, we call it Jungle Love, the animal dating game. It's it's one of my funnest events to do because I get to take off all the constraints, all the language choice that you have to worry about or topic choice with very young children. And the Saturday before Valentine's Day. A lot of zoos do this. We're not unique in any way, but it's just a chance for zoos to really highlight the amazing, sometimes hilarious, sometimes scary, sometimes just bizarre things that animals do to attract and mate, and some of the physical attributes of behaviors. You could write a 500-page book and still not cover it all. And we just have a really fun thing. It'll be on the website, all the details, the cost and that. And so if they check out the website, they'll get all the details on that. But again, I'm planning on it. I'm starting to plan for it right now, and it's one of my favorite things to do, and people really, really enjoy it.
I would imagine so. And what is that website if people want to go and check that out?
It's really just potterparkzoo.org.
Okay, fantastic. And in terms of the winter, we only have about a minute left, but in terms of what people will see besides the Festival of Lights, which just went on in December, what is it that they'll see in January? Is there anything unique about the weather weather and animals in general?
Well, for one thing, the zoo's free till the weather gets warmer, so there's no excuse for not coming out. Our winter hours are 10 to 4. And for some animals, they're more active in the wintertime, things like Amur tigers and snow leopards and red pandas and wolves and Arctic foxes and even the otters and penguins. You know, a lot of those animals prefer one extreme or another, they'll prefer cold to hot. So I guess it's another way to see the animals. The Arctic fox look totally different in the winter than they do in the summer.
Fantastic. We've been talking this morning with Dennis Laidler, the education curator from the Potter Park Zoo. Dennis, thank you so much for coming in again, and we hope to talk with you quite a bit this 2011.
I'll be happy to come back, and I'll try to bring a critter next time.
Hey, you know how much Rick loves it when the creatures scare me, so we appreciate your coming in. And Rick, in the next segment, we've got with us on the line Megan Shannon, who is the education coordinator for Pruce Pets in Old Town, and she's going to talk with us about some of the education programs that take place right at Pruce Pets, right here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.